Next case on the court's calendar is Sunrise Estate. This is Ruben Avery. Who is appearing for Sunrise Estate?
Good morning, Christopher Kala.
And who is appearing for Mr. Avery?
Good morning, Sam Tony.
Thank you. I'll ask each of you to state your name again for the record before beginning each leg of your argument so we have it for the oral recording that's being made. Each of you will have 15 minutes for primary argument. Appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. We have a timing mechanism over here. Please be mindful of the clock. And with that, we're ready to hear from counsel for appellant. Gotcha.
Good morning. May it please the court, Sam Tony for Ruben Avery. This is a case called the legally required process to terminate federally subsidized low income tenants. That process begins with a proposed termination notice. All proposed terminations must be by particular lease, state law, and federal law and regulation. The lease itself and the HUD regulations are clear. Post-termination must advise the tenant that they have 10 days to discuss the proposed termination with the owner. This 10 days is a contractual and regulatory right for a tenant and is very important to everyone. Purpose is to give the tenant options to avoid having an eviction filed.
Just for my information, my understanding that the district court here said there was compliance with another requirement, and that's the mailing requirement for the notice. And you're arguing that that was a mistake, but there wasn't compliance with the mailing requirement.
Sure.
If there was not compliance with the mailing requirement, is that an independent and sufficient ground to reverse such that we would then not consider or need to consider the issue of the 10-day period, whether or not the eviction proceeding can be initiated, and then we have 10 days, or you have to wait until the end of the 10 days. Are they separate issues, either one dispositive?
They're separate issues. Whether either one is dispositive is a good question. It's not the focus of our brief or our argument. Our argument is purely the 10-day rule where you have to wait between the eviction notice and the 10-day expiration to file the eviction.
Understand that, but if the written notice was not mailed, is it your position that that is a failure to comply with federal regulations that justify reversal?
Yes. Yes.
Explain that. Is it jurisdictional?
It's quasi-jurisdictional, I'll say. We see it more as a failure to state a claim, a cause of action requiring dismissal. Now, this goes to kind of the basics of eviction. You know, there needs to be a holdover, proper termination, and then a holdover for an eviction. Right?
Does case law say that a failure to comply with the mailing requirement requires dismissal?
Not in Minnesota.
Okay.
There is case law from other jurisdictions, which was cited in our brief. It certainly does hold that, for example, the mailing or other procedural deficiencies with the termination do require or does warrant dismissal.
Okay, so just so I'm clear as we get started, we don't have precedential case law or binding authority from Minnesota on either one of these issues, but your position is based on non-precedential authorities or other jurisdictions, either one would justify reversal.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
With respect to the mailing, is there any dispute that they received actual notice? So is there any prejudice in not having it mailed?
Not necessarily prejudice. I think that the process matters, and that's really the basis of our entire argument is that in order to have a proper termination, each step in the process needs to be followed. And like I said, our brief focuses entirely, not even mainly entirely, on this 10-day issue. But efficient mailing would be proper grounds for the principle of efficient. That arrangement was also made. Now, the reason the 10 days is important, it gives the tenant up. Mr. Avery could have voluntarily vacated the unit, avoided an eviction. He could have negotiated a settlement with the owner during that 10-day period. He could have contacted legal aid, could have requested a reasonable accommodation. Whether any of these efforts would have been successful or they would have changed the outcome is irrelevant. The process still needs to be followed in every case.
Can I ask a question? Was there anything that stopped him? So I understand that there's consequences of having an eviction action on your file. Are there consequences from having someone file an eviction action against you? I guess that's what I'm trying, like, are there, I honestly don't know that by voluntarily vacating the property before the eviction action is initiated, is there a benefit to your client if they voluntarily leave the unit prior to that being filed as opposed to the eviction being entered?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Big benefit. And that's really...
What's the benefit?
Yeah, but what is it? That's...
Sure.
Yeah.
The benefit is preventing the filing. We all know litigation kind of changes the game. Once a lawsuit is filed, options are limited. Now, once it's filed as well...
But does it prevent your client... Does the filing of an eviction action prevent your client from qualifying for it, right? Because is it... I mean, part of the reason you don't want an eviction on your files and you don't qualify for other housing programs, right?
Right.
Are there similar consequences, maybe not as severe, but similar consequences for the eviction action being filed? Or could he still have voluntarily... Where I'm trying to go is, could he just have voluntarily left even though the eviction act was filed and it would have had the same impact as if he had just voluntarily left the unit prior to the...
Absolutely. Say he voluntarily vacates after the eviction is filed. He is looking for housing. Housing provider does a background search for Mr. Avery and finds the eviction filed.
It doesn't matter that it wasn't resolved.
Correct.
It was the filing.
Now, this is a case about his options and the process that should have been followed. This is not a case about safety from a tenant's allegedly dangerous behavior. If a landlord is looking to protect itself and other tenants, the eviction process is not the first or the only tool. We're not asking this court to tell landlords that they must allow gun-wielding criminals to remain in their property. That's a police issue. If the police find that a crime has been committed, that person will be in jail and off the property. The legal
Well, depending on where you live. So here the allegation is that he was upset. He made statements about having a gun. He's going to shoot people. Said that in front of other people. Said that in front of kids in the office.
Correct. That's the allegation in the complaint basis.
So you're saying that's not a safety concern?
It's absolutely a safety concern, but the eviction process
doesn't account for that. In other words, it doesn't matter why, if you're being evicted for not paying your rent, for having a party, or for threatening to shoot people up in the building, there is no exception for the safety.
Correct. The regulations are what they are, and if it's a legitimate safety issue, police would or should get involved, and like you said, depending on where you live, would certainly affect the action the police takes. But if it's a legitimately dangerous person.
Okay, let me ask you this. HUD regulations provide that no termination by a landlord for a tenant's material noncompliance with a lease shall be valid unless it is in accordance with the provisions of section 247.4. Isn't that authority that says you have to do your written notice, or you have to mail it, you have to comply with everything, or it's not valid? How have courts interpreted that?
Yes, that is a federal statute that needs to be followed. It's not an issue in this case. I'm not going to concede that regulation was or was not followed, but the regulation we're dealing with our HUD regulations because it's a HUD subsidized property. The lease termination.
I thought I was reading a HUD regulation.
You thought, I'm sorry.
I thought that was a HUD regulation.
The HUD says that all proposed terminations must comply with the lease and HUD regulations. And then later in the HUD regulations, that's where we get the 10-day.
Okay. But then what I'm saying, this says no termination by a landlord shall be valid unless it is in accordance with the provisions of 247.4. Oh, I see what you're saying. Here we're not talking about 247.4.
Correct.
Okay.
I'm not saying that they did follow that.
All right, but no, the 247.4 and then 247.4 requires that termination notice be provided to the tenants by the following manner of service, by sending a letter. I mean, it isn't... Aren't these the statutes I'm reading that apply to this issue of whether notice was effective? And if not, whether the termination was valid?
That statute will give you the fact that they need to provide a notice and that they need to mail it. So that's the statute that requires the notice.
Okay. And then what about the statute that says no termination by the landlord shall be valid unless it is in accordance with the provisions of 247.4. 247.4 requires that a termination notice be provided to the tenants by the following manner of service, sending a letter. I mean, I guess why I'm confused is this seems to be authority saying if you don't mail the notice, even if there is actual service, the termination is not valid.
Correct. And that was our position at district court. That was.
So I guess when I asked, do we have case law? I mean, I don't know that we need to look at case law. If the federal statute says the eviction's not valid unless you do A, B, and C, and A wasn't done, or we don't have proof that A was done.
Correct. And that warranted dismissal in our position at the district court. The district court obviously disagreed.
Understood.
Found that mailing. Sufficient evidence that mailing was done based on kind of the statement of counsel that's the general practice of your office.
Was counsel under oath when he said that?
Yes, it was at trial.
Counsel went under oath and
well, it was a statement to the court, I suppose it was an argument of counsel.
All right, so it's an argument by a lawyer or an assertion by a lawyer, yes. Not a statement by a sworn witness.
Sure. Yes.
Let me ask the hearing on this was in October, right? October 14th? Okay. And when he was given the 10-day notice, when was that? That was in September, right?
September 11th. Yeah.
Did that give him time to talk about his options before the hearing?
Yes, but then that goes back to kind of what we talked about before with what are the consequences of having this eviction filed against you before you get the chance to have those discussions.
What is the authority for saying that that has to be done before the filing?
There is no authority that says it needs to necessarily be done before it. The HUD regulation says that it needs to advise of this 10-day period to discuss with the owner. It does not specifically say that they need to wait, but it's a common sense kind of reading of that regulation. What else would this 10 days be if not for discussing
prior? What would a proposed termination?
A proposed termination is just that.
What would a proposed termination be if the termination happened simultaneously with the notice? That's not a proposed termination, that's notice of termination.
Exactly.
And so it reads out the word proposed. Reads out the word, right? I mean, that's the legal interpretation of a HUD handbook, which, you know, I guess that's a question that do we read the HUD handbook as if it's a statute? Like, do we have authority for how we're supposed to go about reading a handbook in this context? Because, right, I mean, it's very clear, like HUD regulations, we know what kind of process those have gone through. And because of the process, we have sort of our rules of how we interpret them. Do we have any guidance in Minnesota about sort of when we have handbooks incorporated into statutory schemes? Do we do sort of the same kind of nitpicking of the words type of analysis. I guess what's your authority for that that's the right way to go about construing the language in the handbook?
The lease says that the lease incorporates the HUD handbook. That's why that's what gives it authority.
The right, but sense. It still doesn't tell us what it means.
No, it does not.
And my question is this. If we have HUD regulations that say you must mail notice, and if you don't, the termination's invalid, why are we embarking in this path of interpretation of language in the HUD handbook? I understand why you want us to do that and what do you want us to say, but as an error-correcting court, you know, we're not out looking to make law that doesn't need to be made in this case.
Sure.
I mean, we don't have to interpret, it's not very difficult to interpret a HUD regulation that says you must follow these steps. If you don't, the termination's invalid. It's clear, as opposed to a statement in a handbook. You can address that in rebuttal. Counsel, your name for the record once again before you begin.
I guess I'm not sure where we want to start. Mailing.
Yes, let's start with the mailing.
Sure. First, I was the attorney at that proceeding. I wasn't under oath. First, I didn't understand that mailing was an issue prior to the call. Again, we could have filed an affidavit. That's not a condition preceding to file those affidavits, as it would be affidavit of service of the summons and complaint. That's why it's an affidavit.
Okay, but you've got a federal statute that says if you don't do this, it's invalid. So wouldn't it behoove you to just file it, to mail and file in every case? I don't know that you can say, well, no one raised it as an issue, therefore we didn't have to mail. Is that what you're arguing?
No, I'm saying we didn't know it was going to be a part of the defense. Therefore, we weren't prepared to prove that. Had that been an issue,
Did you offer to submit it afterwards?
I didn't appear at that point that there was an issue yet. The judge or attorney objected to my statement that we all would know.
Was that raised at the hearing that the notice hadn't been mailed?
At the hearing, but not at the end. And that was my argument. Part of it. Look, I mean, I'll tell you, we mail these all the time. That's how we can. Sometimes our clients draft the notices of termination, they mail them. Again, we don't file affidavits from our client that they mail the termination notice because it's not a required filing. Certainly we could.
But it's a required element of proof if you want to establish the validity of a termination.
No, it's not something that needs to be pled. Certainly the defense.
Well, I understand that, but what I'm saying, I mean, do you agree that the HUD regulation says no termination by a landlord shall be valid unless it is in accordance with the provisions of 247.4. And that statute says, number one, sending a letter by first class mail. So whether it's in the pleadings, whether it's required filing, at the end of the day, it's not valid if there no one can say, yeah, they sent the letter.
I agree. And it's not an issue until somebody raised it. It wasn't raised in the answer. It was only raised.
So what I'm asking is, when it was raised, did you say, Your Honor, I'm sorry, we didn't realize that this was going to be contested, our bad, will you leave the record open for a week, we'll submit an affidavit?
Everything but the last one. Did notify the court we weren't aware this was an issue?
Understood. So we don't have evidence that there was a mailing?
Right. Except for what I stated in court, but not.
And if we don't have evidence that there was a mailing, isn't the termination
invalid under 247.3 subpart A?
No, because it wasn't. But I have no idea that that was an issue they had proved.
I'm not sure. I don't know that you get to have that be your defense. They didn't raise it. If it's a requirement of a valid termination, isn't it just the landlord's obligation to satisfy those requirements?
I'll give you an example. So recently, Minnesota law changed its position regarding pre-filing notice for non-payment. Minneapolis, the state enacting such a statute, there was an ordinance requiring if you want to fix something for non-payment, you have to notify them. There was no requirement that an affidavit of that service be provided or that the notice be provided. Now, there is that state law.
Okay.
And the state statute required you shall provide a copy of that notice with the filing.
And does the state statute say, and if you don't, the eviction's invalid?
Yes, 321 says if you don't comply with these filing requirements, there's no requirement that an affidavit be provided that we mail or deliver this pre-filing notice. We just have to provide a copy of the pre-filing notice that was given. Again, no affidavit, a condition precedes dismissal if you don't comply. But the level of proof that the landlord has to provide affirmatively as part of the filing, you don't have to do that.
But we're not talking about the time of filing. Right now we're talking about trial, right? And you're saying that this mailing, lack of mailing is a defense. And I don't understand why it's a defense as opposed to an element of the claim that you have to prove at trial to show that this is a valid termination. I guess I'm not sure what the legal authority is that the burden is on the appellant as opposed to the landlord at the time of trial when the question is whether this is a proper termination.
Because there's no pleading requirement that be provided with the filing of the complaint.
But why isn't it an element of fact that needs to be proved at trial to show? I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you about the pleading requirement. I'm wondering why that is not a fact that you are required to establish at trial. Like, for example, if I'm prosecuting a traffic ticket, I have to get up and I have to prove that whatever intersection the person was at is in the state of Minnesota. And I have to get somebody up on the stand and I have to prove that basic element. That everybody knows is true. But if I don't, like if the cop gets up and I don't establish that this crime occurred in the state of Minnesota and I'm the prosecutor, that's it. The defendant didn't need to raise that as a defense. It's just an element that needed to be proven. Why isn't the fact of the mailing more akin to that, proving a crime occurred in the state of Minnesota as opposed to an affirmative defense? Right, which is what you seem to be saying, is that it's an affirmative defense to say that this mailing did or did not occur. And that's where I'm struggling. At the point that you're at trial, why didn't you have to?
No case law has ever established that issue is an element of the plaintiff's crime. I don't have to prove that to bail at trial. If this was a default proceeding, I wouldn't need to prove that it was. I would still have to have this demonstration. You know, there's no case law that establishes that. We have a statute, right?
Yeah.
We have to do this. But again, we weren't put on notice that that was an issue for trial. I would argue it's waived. And that's kind of what I argued at the trial court. They didn't raise this, but if you want proof, we mail them. And that was sufficient for the judge. And I don't believe this is being raised by the I'm here today on the mailing. The only issue today is 10 days. I think the council basically conceded. It's only common sense. There's no requirement. The common sense concites to is your concerns. Well, what options does the tenant have prior to the eviction filing? Is there, you know, why would we do that?
Well, I mean, I don't think that's totally fair because there is the fact that the handbook says proposed termination? And what is the meaning of the word proposed if the termination occurs simultaneously? Then it's not a proposed. 10 days to discuss a proposed termination means nothing if the termination notice has already happened.
Sure, but that kind of conflates the whole idea of what a proposed termination is in Minnesota. The landlord doesn't get to terminate anything. It's project-based housing. The court does. Nothing is final. I mean, to that extent, if it's proposed, and I wait 10 days, and he hasn't requested a meeting,
still proposed.
It's complete that it's terminated upon the completion of those 10 days, and then I walk into court, and it's merely a holdover after the notice because, hey, the landlord has the authority, the legal capacity to terminate somebody's tenancy. They don't, not in project-based. Only the court does. In Minnesota, in a market-rate property, if your lease expires on last day of June, give you notice in April, hey, we're not going to renew your lease. July 1 comes around, we're done, unless there's some defense that you get the notice or it's retaliatory or discriminatory. But in project-based housing, the proposal of the termination is only leading us to the date that the judge issues the order terminating the tenancy. The court terminates, not the landlord.
Just so I understand what you're saying, you're saying that you complied with the statute because this was a proposed termination and he still had 10 days before the hearing. Is that accurate?
As to prejudice, absolutely. And the only issue Mr. Avery raised at trial as to why he couldn't find other housing wasn't that there was an eviction act. Page 44 of the transcript, he talks about his criminal record stopped him from getting the house. And his credit stopped him from getting the house. There was no testimony from him that prospective landlord saw a pending eviction filing and said,
but you don't disagree in a hypothetical, I mean, like take it out of this case, that in a hypothetical case, something similar to what happened here happens and you immediately file the eviction petition, never giving the tenant an opportunity to volunteer. The eviction proceeding gets immediately filed without ever giving the tenant an opportunity to voluntarily vacate. You don't disagree that hypothetically, a hypothetical person with a clean record, that that couldn't impact their ability in the future? Or are you saying you don't think that there are any consequences from the filing of an eviction?
I'm always concerned that filing. We know that. We know that we take it very seriously. And the allegation or not false. I've been with Kevin actually. So keep in mind, he's not displaced. But the court decides the allegation is sufficiently true to meet the legal burden. He still has his housing. If he doesn't lose his housing, then the lack of the ability to retain replacement housing isn't an issue because presumably he wants to stay living. Otherwise, he would have vacated before the landlord.
Or he realizes that he screwed up and wants to voluntarily vacate so he doesn't have the eviction. I think that that's the argument that appellant is making, is you, if you have a person that really screws up, they know they screwed up, that if you don't give the individual some kind of time, that they can just say, I screwed up, I'll leave the property, don't file the eviction petition. And that this like simultaneous filing doesn't give a person to honestly say, I screwed up, I'm going to walk away from this property. Just please don't put that on my record. And I think that that's the sort of prejudice argument that's being made in this case with respect to sort of this simultaneous, here's your notice and simultaneously we're filing this in court, but you don't give the person the opportunity to say, yep, I screwed up all week.
Two responses. One is, and what if they don't? So, you know, I screwed up. I can't tell you how many cases I have where somebody agrees to vacate. Landlord just presumes they're going to vacate, doesn't sign a mutual termination, then they don't vacate. Happens all the time. Or you do have a signed mutual termination and they still don't vacate. We have to file the eviction, even with the breach issue.
And what is the timeline to trial an eviction case? Is it?
It depends on county. It used to be.
What do the rules require?
Again, the rules, statute used to say that first appearance is the trial.
The trial.
And can be continued for up to 7 days, depending on the circumstances. That's changed. And now it's all depending on certain.
Okay, so there's no, like, must be a trial within 30 days. So you could go in on your eviction and say, I need my date, and the district court can say 90 days.
They say, our calendar booked for the next 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Even on an expedited eviction.
So if we accept appellant's view of the handbook, it's 2 months, 10 days. The 10 days is essentially extra period of time that the person gets to stay there before the eviction proceedings are started.
That's his position.
That's his position. What's your position?
My position is that that comes from the Staten and Linares case. Staten talks about older version of the statute.
And Staten is a case from where?
That is... at Southwestern District, Pennsylvania. I talk about it, page 17.
In the overview of the case law, where's the split? Who's saying what regarding this 10 days?
Well, that's kind of the interesting issue, Matt. If you're being asked to decide if the interpretation and application as applied to almost exclusively state proceedings, you don't do evictions in federal. So, really, the only two cases that appellant gives you is Linares and Staten. Neither of them tell you explicitly that you have to wait 10 days before you file. There's no binding authority in Minnesota, either from this court, Minnesota Supreme Court, any federal court in Minnesota, the Eighth Circuit, that says what the appellant wants you to do.
Where the state split? I think that's maybe to clarify or ask a slightly different question than Judge Larkin. Where the states that have had to address this issue, how have they come down? Where is the split between the states on what's the meaning of 10 days?
I don't know, because every case that I address line by line, in the different competition, I would propose not one case on sites stands for the proposition. Don't wait 10 days. The eviction must be single case. And I know my time ran out. I would just like to reiterate in my response brief. Page 18, 24 CFR. 966.4, a case for proposed adverse action other than a proposed lease term. PHA shall not take the proposed action until the time for the tenant's request. It's expressly excluding evictions. Now, say evictions for this type of breach, demonstrating why that exception is.
Your name once more for the record, please.
Sam Domi.
Thank you.
Your Honor raised the question at the end of my initial statement of why we need to get to this 10-day rule when we have this mailing issue that could dispose of it or could dispose of the case. And I don't have a legal authority answer. All I can tell you is that that was an error and it is important. And for all of the options we discussed, is why we should interpret that 10-day rule to say that a landlord does need to wait 10 days before filing.
And could you, on the written notice, did you assert that as grounds?
Yes.
Forgo the eviction?
Yes.
Okay, so it was raised and decided by the district court. Correct. And argued in district court.
Correct. And the district court specifically said that the landlord does not need to wait 10 days between.
Okay, but the mailing requirement. Yeah.
Yes, the mailing issue was raised as a
defense
and motion to dismiss. Now, back to this, you know, why we should interpret it. Interpreting it in the way that we are asking is in line with Minnesota's push to make evictions harder and expungements easier. Minnesota has recognized the importance of sustainable, affordable, low-income housing. And sustainable meaning a tenant gets housing and can remain in that housing for long term. Evictions obviously are a barrier to that. So Minnesota says we need to make evicting someone.
So, good point. Why doesn't someone go to the legislature and say, hey, we should take this HUD handbook proposition and write it into law? Because the argument you've just made is a policy argument. I'm sure somebody else will go to the legislature and say, I don't want my property in the hands of somebody who's been accused of threatening to shoot other residents, because am I going to be liable as a landlord when that happens? You've now required me to keep the person there another 10 days. And I can't get anywhere near a court calendar for a trial. So there is a counter policy. I'm not saying which policy is right or wrong. We're not in the policy business. And it seems to me the argument you're making should be made across the street from the judicial center and not at the judicial center.
You're right, it should be, and hopefully it is, but we still need to deal with the HUD regulation. The lease says it needs to comply with the HUD regulation.
But we don't know what it means to comply.
Right. But we can infer what it means very simply. It's a common sense ruling. Why else would this 10-day rule be in place?
Just to force a conversation. Because I can imagine that the landlord posts the eviction notice, mails it, and then says, not talking to you. We'll see you in court. Right?
Yes, that does happen a lot.
So the landlord would not be able to do that, at least for a 10-day period. He'd be required to have some conversation with the tenant to see if they could come up with a solution.
Yes. And
so there is a reason. There's one interpretation of it that would say, no, you don't add 10 days to the eviction process. You're just forcing the landlord to come to the table immediately or within a short time after filing in the hopes that they can work something out.
Yes, but the 10-day language comes from the section that is specifically telling the landlord what steps it needs to take before they can officially terminate or file an eviction. And it is that proposed termination language. And the proposed, obviously, very important. And it is proposed until that 10 days expire. It's now lease terminated. And I don't agree with counsel's argument that only the court can terminate a lease. The court can evict somebody, but a lease needs to be terminated.
So and the landlord terminates, and then the court issues a writ of recovery.
Correct.
That's what the trial is about.
Correct. And
because if the landlord terminates and the folks move out, there's no reason to go to court.
Perfect. That's the ideal situation. Obviously, we would prefer that and remain keeps the housing, but avoiding the eviction is a huge benefit to any tenant who is faced with this.
Did Mr. Avery ask to meet with the landlord?
No. He was essentially not given that option because the eviction was filed. Now, he still obviously had that option, but once the eviction is filed at the beginning.
In the 10-day regulation, does it say that the tenant has to be notified of this 10-day period and that they have the right to meet and confer?
Yes.
And here the tenant was notified, but they removed the word post, correct?
Correct. And the 10 days was ignored. Not, I mean, the 10 days was interpreted as meeting.
Any questions, Smith? Well, thank you both of you for your arguments and indulging our questions. The matter is submitted. You'll have our decision within 90 days.